Hello, this is Peter Davison. You're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
This is Gallifrey Public Radio, a weekly podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of Doctor Who. We travel through classic and new episodes, explore the extended universe, and play a few games from time to time. We do discuss news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but we'll warn you before anything considered spoilers comes up.
Welcome to episode 434 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where even when you try to do the right thing, someone's gonna claim that you made it worse. Stupid dinosaurs. I'm Jay.
I'm Julie.
I'm Kier.
And I'm Haley. And this week, season 19 of our classic era comes to a crashing end, pun intended, with Earthshock. You've got problems stacked upon problems, but only one person is really going to take the fall for it. Again, pun intended.
So our story opens up with problems among a missing cavern expedition in the 26th century, and a paramilitary squad being called in to rescue them. The TARDIS materializes in those caves, putting the Doctor and the companions in the crosshairs of some strange, featureless black androids.
Things escalate quickly as we learn the power behind these mechanical menaces are none other than the Cybermen trying to prepare a massive bomb. While that attempt is thwarted, the cyber leader isn't done quite yet.
Now, our attention, and conveniently the location of the TARDIS, shifts to a space freighter in orbit, and lo and behold, the Cybermen have plans for that too. It takes some time for the Doctor and company to earn the favor of the human crew, but all attention turns to stopping the Silver Menace.
Before you know it, lasers are blasting, humans are running, and the ship itself is being weaponized against the planet in an attempt to stop a conference that would lead to an alliance in war against the Cybermen.
Our records indicate that you have a fondness for Earth.
Fondness? I'm surprised your emotionless brain understands the word.
It is a word like any other, and so is destruction. Which is what we are going to do to that planet.
You've tried before.
This time we shall succeed, and you will live just long enough to witness it.
Reactivation completed.
Excellent. Now you will see our strength.
So we have a story here that from its inception, we have now had a couple of stories from Eric Saward. We've kind of liked his writing style quite a bit. Sort of keeps it peppy and interesting and tries to involve all the characters to a certain degree, even if he doesn't, I think originally didn't really know how many companions he was going to be writing for. By this one, he did. So if you look at sort of the dialogue balance, it is pretty well split. I actually counted lines just to see. Whether, because I couldn't really remember. I'm like, is Nyssa really in this one? Is Tegan really in this one? Yeah, well, they were. But it's written pretty clear that this is a very special episode for Adric.
Yeah, I feel like... I feel like this is one of those episodes that we've come to love for other more recent series that you didn't used to get back then very often, where you highlight that character and then, honk, they're done.
Right. if you're listening along with us and you are one of those strange types who listens to a cast discussing an episode or a story that you have not yet watched, stop.
Oh,
spoiler warning.
Right.
Is there not a spoiler warning in our intro?
I would hope so.
I think you should do that this time.
I love getting that hate mail. I love it so much. Well, all mail is good mail. So in this particular case, we start off with an interesting kind of opening. You know, this lost expedition. You've got this sort of paramilitary group brought in to try and figure out how to extract them. They're using funky technology that they're probing.
I loved the science. Yes. It was all fake, but I loved it.
Right. And you get this kind of throwaway reference. Oh, look, fossils, you know. TARDIS shows up. But we have this nice conversation before we exit the TARDIS where Adric is talking about wanting to go back. And I have to say, this is really strong performance from Waterhouse on this, I think. I think this is actually some of the most connectable, identifiable Adric that we've ever had. More's the pity.
Yeah. No, it definitely was. And that, like, you had that moment of like, oh, Adric's going to be leaving. And then very quickly kind of like, oh, no, I guess he's not. He was just, you know, he doesn't actually want to leave. So it was kind of a nice little pump fake there to make you like, it's like really care about him right up front. And then it's like, oh, I guess he's not leaving. Well, we'll just enjoy him this time anyway.
I feel like it was... If the end hadn't been what it was, I still feel like it was some good character building and relationship building for him and the Doctor. Mm-hmm. It's really pushing the Doctor to respond to personal issues and to deal with the fact that, yeah, he's been kind of treating Adric in a certain way. And regardless of whether they intended it, it's how Adric's feeling.
Yeah.
And so it kind of brings you back around to that, like, are his feelings justified? And... You know, yes, it is his own fault that he sneaked aboard the TARDIS.
Sure. But
still, he's way out of place everywhere he goes.
Yeah. Well, I like the fact that you mentioned the sort of calling the Doctor out on his treatment of Adric, especially within the last couple of stories. His treatment of everyone, really. You know, we tend to paint the Fifth Doctor in this very kind light as being this super patient, calm, roll with it, I'm going to make this, everything's going to be a teachable moment or what have you. He's genuinely short-tempered in the last couple of stories with all three of his companions at one point or another, or all at once. And this is sort of a snapback on that, that sort of makes him realize the repercussions of his treatment. Now, right now it's strictly for Adric's benefit.
But we just came off the heels of it being Tegan.
Right.
Receiving the brunt of the complaining and bitterness from him.
Yeah, yeah. They just shouldn't have conversations around the console. Every time they talk around the console, things get nasty.
You can't see eye to eye. There's something in the way.
Somebody's feelings get hurt. But so we realize that there's some danger going on down in these caverns here, and we keep seeing these shadowy figures. The, you know, cinematography is actually kind of interesting, the way that they do all this. I guess it helps the fact that they've got their first adversaries in total flat black suits. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was Daft Punk for a hot minute.
Yes. Daft Punk went real dark.
I was ready for the music and the beats to drop.
No, it was the guys from Starship Troopers.
Oh, yeah.
Good point.
Why couldn't it be both? But then we realized, there's robots behind them, robots. And we're dealing with a larger issue. John Nathan Turner wanted to keep this entire thing total secret during the filming. Sort of shades of what they try to do these days. They barred press from the shooting locations. They did a lot of things on like fenced off closed sets, and they refused to do on set interviews prior to the story airing, which is something they had gotten in the habit of doing with some of the local papers and magazines and stuff. So all that was done so that they could reveal this new revamped, updated look of the Cybermen. Are our Cybermen heading in a good direction, or do you still kind of pine a bit for our classic Mondasian Cybermen and their sock heads? And
I've always thought the Cybermen were a bit silly looking. So change is just, it's different silly, not less silly.
Right. You could see the mouths moving now. Yeah,
on a couple of them.
It was a very chatty Cyberman, so they had to have the mouths move.
Well, you know, Cyber Leader would talk.
Kind of reminded me of Bane.
Yeah, all right. I can see that parallel.
I thought it was interesting with the Cyber Leader. The only indicator that I could tell was the black handles.
Yes, that's it. Only differentiating, well, why bother? I mean, you don't need to have a whole lot of extra trappings just because you're the boss. You just need to talk more and have a slightly different color scheme.
Super slightly. Like, against the background sometimes, I was like, not which noticeable. One?
Do you want him to have a sash or something?
Was it even on purpose, or did they just forget to paint that bit of PVC?
He got one of the extra helmets from the back instead of his actual assigned helmet.
Going forward, we do realize the leader of any of these forces ends up getting the little black antenna. That's just kind of their differentiating. Because otherwise, you never really know who to shoot at and who to talk to. All right, I got to shoot at them, but I got to talk to him. Them.
Well, they're like ants when they show up, just pouring out. You have to know how to identify which is the one.
Well, and later with the Cybermen, isn't the whole point that there's not a leader, that they're all the same? So
yes.
We don't get that anymore.
They go through some revision. They learn from their mistakes, I guess.
They still hate everyone, absolutely. But they learn from their mistakes.
Yeah. But it appears that their plan is going to go forward. They have backups upon backups, right? Mm. This great massive bomb gets us all through the first episode and a half or so. Tense moments, are you going to defuse it and so forth. And the moment that gets defused, they're able to pivot immediately to plan B. So kudos to the cyber fleet for knowing how to have their plans stacked at least two, if not three deep. Does that cheapen the original plan? Like they had it all set. If they had the wherewithal to be able to get the bomb down into the caves and so forth, but they knew their backup plan was to hijack this freighter, I don't know, I would have done the freighter first. It's a lot harder to stop than a bomb that's just hidden in a cave.
I do think they value the numbers of Cybermen they had available to be sort of fleet or crew. And
not wanting to sacrifice them all?
Yeah. And I don't know that it's necessarily the same as human lives in terms of what are they worth to themselves. But I do think that they probably had some value there.
You'd have to ask the cyber accountant.
It's still a resource. They don't have an emotional attachment to it, but an analysis of the situation says resources are good.
Yeah. And that was one thing I was kind of confused about, was the fact that you had an entire battalion of Cybermen and they had two androids, and the androids were valuable, because why can't they, like, wouldn't it be kind of simple to take like an empty Cybermen shell and just program basics, go forward, do this thing?
I think there were certain capabilities of these androids that the standard Cybermen didn't have, right? Hand lasers, for one.
Iron Man hands, Captain.
Right. Yep, total Iron Man shot there. Plus, they're wicked fast and know how to skulk much better than your standard clunking Cybermen.
All they needed was matte black paint on a Cyberman suit.
They used all the black paint they had on the leader's little top thingy.
Yep.
Should have known better.
Yep, they had to buy more rattle cans.
Well, I also wonder... Obviously, the bomb and the androids got to Earth faster somehow. Mm-hmm. So if that had anything to play into it, since the whole fleet was coming later.
Right. Well, the androids were there to protect the hatch that led to the bomb, right? So maybe they were the ones that also placed it there in the first place. If they're so stealthy, you know, they were sent ahead. Mm-hmm. And then you've got this cargo ship with a crew that... I mean, I love him. Well, I love most of them. I really couldn't stand Scott. But as far as our captain and her XO, I kind of dug them. I liked the fact that they were so gruff and, you know, business is business and so on. Mm-hmm. They don't really trust anybody. I don't trust you, even though you're trying to save my life, because you're probably just going to take my life later. So everybody's suspect right now.
And that she, as a captain during that time, was just about the bonus. Don't care about anybody else.
Yep.
But it's all about the bonus.
Which is a perfect justification for the fact that they never question once what they're carrying in. Yeah. 200,000 cyber warriors or whatever the number was.
Once she did. At the very end, when she goes, huh, I wonder. And I almost could see the thought bubbles go up.
With a little scale, profit on one side, world destruction on the other, and it's just teetering.
Wait, if the world gets destroyed, who's going to pay me? Oh.
There you go.
Well, who hired them in the first place?
She should have just turned around and said, give me my money. Take the ship. I'm going to go on this.
a deal's a deal, guys. All you got to do is pay me. It's all yours.
Yeah. Escape pod. Patwee.
Yeah. There's nowhere else to go, but.
Right. And she'll never get paid in gold. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Maybe she had like a nice beach house for her retirement. And she's like, ah.
Way to telegraph that gold bit, though, right? Where Adrix was not hiding that at all. He's like, oh, gold.
My gold badge.
I got it for being good at math.
Don't touch it. Yeah.
But yeah, but it still did sting a little bit when you see it getting crushed in the hand. Oh, but that was so valuable to him. He's been whining about that thing for a season and a half. Oh. Mm-hmm.
His dreams are slowly sliding away. I wonder what could possibly go wrong.
Well, I don't know. So that bookend of the very special moments that he has in the heartfelt argument slash reconciliation with the doctor from the first episode to where we get in, obviously, his long drawn out attempts to be the problem solver at the close. I know when the story is sort of summarized quickly, they just say Adric made the decision to or used his mathematical skills to save the ship, you know, save the occupants, or I should say, save the inhabitants of Earth 26th century from the ship by sending it back through time. It was a mistake, right? I'm interpreting this right, correctly? Like he went in to try to mess with the warp drive. To try to steer it and accidentally trigger the warp drive that took a ship that wasn't supposed to be able to have time travel.
And accidentally made it travel
through
time?
Turned it into a time machine, yeah.
With about as much accuracy as the doctor piloting the TARDIS. 65 million years off target.
To be fair, within the last 30 minutes before he made that mistake, he was calculating how to go to e-space and jump that other barrier thing.
He says he got that right. The doctor looked at it, looked back at him, and said, "You did this?" He never actually said whether or not it was right. He just sort of gave him a head pat and said, "Oh, look what you did.
Look at you doing math."
So what you're implying is the fact that that really somebody was labeling Adric as like a troublemaker, and they're like, "Oh, no, this is because you're so good at maths." Yeah. Yeah.
Give the problem child a job to do, mm-hmm. and they'll feel responsible.
And that's why the master's plans also were foiled. He put all his trust in Adric, and
it turns out he was just a noob with a gold badge. But yeah, I don't know. I have no problems with the story, really. I think it moves along at a good clip. And yeah, it does seem like it takes him a little while through episodes 2 and 3 to get the real cyber takeover going and get the guns blazing and so forth. But I don't know. I don't really have any bones to pick with it.
I felt like the drama beats were good through episodes 2 and 3. Mm. And that you had some of those critical moments that kept the story moving without... I didn't feel like it dragged at all. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed the how do we get from A to B, because I feel like there were connecting pieces that if you left any of those out, it would have been those fantastical jumps that we're used to seeing. Mm.
It was a fairly solid story that had a lot of heart to it. You know, more than I think I can remember seeing with pretty much any of the Fifth Doctor stories up to this point. Like it, you could tell that there was a lot of feeling that went into this even before, you know, we found out what the payoff was.
Right. I think if anything, I wish that for their balance of dialogue, their actual involvement in the progression of the plot was a little less for Tegan and Nyssa on this, for reasons because you're trying to actually kind of shine a brighter light on Adric. But at least Tegan stayed true to her involvement to take the risk. You know, give me a jumpsuit, get me in there, I'm going.
And run the other way when everyone else retreats, just...
Yeah.
Go on through.
Yeah. How do you know your heroes? They're the ones running towards the danger instead of away, right? Thank you, Mr. Rogers. But yeah, Nyssa on this one, I still try to figure where... I would have thought that they would have involved her a little more in the sort of the counterplotting, because she's got that analytical mind, that inventive mind. I would have thought that could have come into play somewhere, even in the diffusing of the bomb back in episode one or something like that.
I think the writers are still struggling with too many companions and not knowing what piece to give all of them.
Yeah.
When you've got three companions on top of the guests of the week. That's just a lot of people to shuffle.
Tegan is the action hero. Okay, fine. We need her to run into danger. Got it. Well, now we need, you know, somebody to be smart. well, we've already got Adric doing that this time, so we can't have Nyssa doing the same thing. You can't have two smart companions.
Oh, clearly. No, you can't have that much intelligence running around. You know, what would you possibly do with the viewers?
Well, I also think someone needed to be the audience back in the TARDIS watching some of this to give a little bit of that through line.
Which usually would be Adric.
Yeah, that's true. He's always the ones that go back in the house. Stay in the house, Carl. But I will say also to Tegan's benefit, this is the story where we finally get her referring to herself to being a mouth on legs.
Yep.
There you go. And that became Janet Fielding's self-identifier for decades to come. So you got to love that. Yeah. So, I mean, are there particular moments that really stand out either to the good or to the ill that, that this story can be remembered for on a considerably lower level, of course, than the obvious on-screen, really slowly occurring demise of a principal character? Is there anything else that kind of bubbles to the surface and says, you know, I'm going to remember this story for this?
I one of my favorite parts was kind of the foreshadowing of when the freighter was going to hit Earth. Because you had the tee up earlier in the episode where they were like, oh, you know, this is how the dinosaurs died. And, you know, and then you get the freighter going back in time. And it's like, oh, the penny drops before it actually happens.
Right.
I do like the reveal of the Cybermen. Like, that's something that always sticks in my mind, too. It was like, because it is kind of a nice pump fake of like, oh, there's androids. Well, who's behind the androids? Well, more androids. Well, kind of androids, but...
I remember that when the reveal happened, I turned and looked. I was like, oh, yeah!
They're in this show.
But yeah, it's been guys. A while since we've seen the Cybermen. So it was kind of a nice payoff when they showed up again.
And specifically, I like the fact they did the little walk down memory lane montage of the Cybermen's databanks on the Doctor.
I was about to say that. That was nice.
That was a very inspiring moment.
So that's Sayward saying, you know, that's the tip of the hat saying a real cognizance and recognition of the fans who have stuck through this, or that have their parents have told them what's going on in the show, you know, 20 years later now, because the show's been on the air for 20 years at this point.
And there's no reruns or anything at this time still, right?
Nope.
So if you didn't see that episode when it aired, you didn't see it. So this is them telling the viewer of, hey, the Doctor has faced this enemy before.
Yeah.
Which is very well done.
It's got to be very cool for viewers at the time, for young viewers at the time, to be able to see footage of a show that they've had described to them by an old generation. And they've probably seen in magazines or TV Guide or Radio Times, something like that. They see what Patrick Troughton looks like. They see what, you know, or what these past episodes have looked like in still photographs. And now they're seeing a little bit of that enacted on screen. That's just got to be a cool experience first time around.
Yeah. And I think that we see some of that through Modern Who too, where they've pulled things like that out to say, hat tip, this is where we come from, this is our history, which is really nice.
Just remember the closing moments of the 11th Hour.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I mean, and that was just a smash cut montage distorted in a little time bubble thing and a hologram, and Matt Smith walks through it. But you're like, yeah, that's that. This is why I'm watching this thing, because it brings it all full circle.
Yep.
I want payoff for my investment for the years I've invested in this thing. So, yeah, because we love to do it, classic stories, rewatchability, recommendability.
I'd recommend it and I would watch it again. I would recommend it for someone who has seen some of this traveling crew together, though. Mm. Because if you just watch this, it's not a standalone. You need to know some of the backstory.
Agreed. Yeah. Yeah, it is rewatchable. I've seen this one probably, I think this might be my third time through it. And there's always something more to get out of it. I mean, especially if you know, leave a little bit of a gap between viewings. There's all kinds of new things. But as far as recommendability, like I said, I feel like this is one of the more passionate Fifth Doctor stories that we've seen so far. Like, you do want to have the basis of knowing who the characters are, because it's kind of lackluster if you don't. But but it is an important Fifth Doctor episode.
Yeah,
I'm gonna agree with Julie and Jay. Definitely rewatchable. I could rewatch it in the next week probably if I wanted to, if I had any time. And I would definitely recommend it. Like I said, you probably need to know this crew a little bit, but it's a good Fifth Doctor story. It's a good Cyberman story. So it fills a lot of buckets of if you're looking for an episode to recommend.
One thing that I always think about too is what would that have felt like then to watch one of your companions die?
Right.
And you haven't really seen that happen before. They might have left or been left behind or made the choice to go somewhere, but to actually see one of them die, that's big. And I wonder how it'll be handled.
This is the first on-screen death of any major character, really.
Right. Well, other than the Doctor.
But yeah, regeneration, but that's different.
Got better.
But the fact that while we're seeing it happen on a monitor, we're watching the expression of the remaining characters, which is just as tough of a watch, you know, and the Doctor in the foreground looking off, not wanting to make eye contact with any of them as they're turning to him for some sort of answers or some sort of any sort of show of kindness to be able to see them through this.
Kindness or is there anything else that could be done? Right. What are we doing just sitting here watching this?
Mm-hmm. You know, when the Doctor allows certain things to happen because it sets historical things in motion, like the Great Fire of London, we think, oh, okay, well, that's just the way it is. Well, here's the demise of the dinosaurs, and we just let it go again. Because, well, it just happened to be Adric. Well, who knew?
And the demise of the dinosaurs is a fixed point in history, so I don't think you could change that. That would change the whole history of the world.
Right.
But to your point, Adric, the ship's not going to change course because you pull him out of it.
Right. Could the Doctor have gotten him out of it? Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing that I felt like watching it this time, like I was kind of watching the Doctor and trying to imagine what was playing it out in his mind at the moment. And it was, it's like, well, if the dinosaurs still existed, would humankind ever, like, you know, even reach sentience? You know, would they get to the point of that they are now? And he's kind of balancing that. And he's like, well, you know, to your point, Julie, like, if I go in and steal Adric, like, the ship's still going to blow up. It's still going to crash. But butterfly effect, like, what could that alter? Would it alter anything? And it's just kind of the Doctor sitting there playing through all of that and realizing, I can't do anything because I can't risk the repercussions.
Mm-hmm. We could tease that apart endlessly. You know, the whole idea of, you know, what was the pivotal moment? Is it the fact that since we're painting with a wide brush and saying the ship crashing at this exact point back in whatever Paleolithic era, I don't even know where we are, Jurassic, Neoplatonic, I don't know where we are in history.
I think they talked about it earlier on.
It's science-y mindset.
That was something. How does Nyssa know all of this Earth history?
She was reading a ton of books on the TARDIS. She was tearing through the TARDIS library during all of their downtime. She had talked about all the things that she had.
Is that? Are you being for real, or are you covering for her?
No.
Okay. Cool. No, that I appreciate that then.
But I'm using that. That established point of canon to explain why it is that she might know anything about Earth history. Yeah. I got a feeling she just became a bit of an Earthophile.
Hanging out with Tegan, so she kind of wants to know that this is where she's from, and maybe they swap stories. And
so wait, there's Coke and Pepsi? What is this one? But the whole idea of, you know, if you don't know exactly what it was that caused the mass extinction, maybe it was what happened when he took Adric out at the last possible second. You know, it's just you could dance around the what ifs endlessly. But better just say, let's smash Adric into the planet and go to a very creepy, no music, no blackout credits that just focuses on the smashed badge. Like, they're really painting this thing an inch thick on the pathos.
But it worked, though.
Like, did.
I remember the first time I watched this, and I had seen exactly one Adric story before I saw this. And it was not a good one. I don't remember which one it was, but I was like, good God, this Adric kid is annoying as hell. And then I sat and watched this, and I get to the end, and I'm just sitting there staring at the screen like, what the hell? And the silent credits rolling was just like, what the hell? Like, it works.
I have to wonder, on original broadcast, how we've seen at times, we've seen cuts that were taken from the original airings, and you would hear the BBC commentator say, well, that's it for this week on Doctor Who. Coming up next, you know, Dancing with Your Grandmother, or whatever it was, it was airing next. I would have... What?
Sorry, Dancing with Your Grandmother.
It's a hit show. It was a massive hit. Until she blew out her hip, and then everybody just felt it.
But she whacked you with a cane if you did the steps wrong.
Maybe this show wasn't a good idea.
But I gotta wonder if they asked the BBC commentator, can you just keep shtum for like 90 seconds?
Well, I always imagine that they're just sitting there watching all the shows, so they would have been racked with silence too, right?
Just, or you just hear them going, holy crap.
Did you see that? Did you see what they did? I don't remember what comes next. Goodbye. Don't watch it. Go to bed. Go you cry yourself like, to sleep.
Someone outside of the booth like, say something.
He's just like, you have to speak now.
On air. On air.
The red light. But yeah, so, but then by the time when we get back around to the classic rewatch in a couple weeks or 3 weeks' time, we have to see how the repercussions are handled.
That is... I want to see how Nyssa and Tegan handle it, how they treat the doctor, how they go through the motions of surviving that grief.
Mm-hmm. Daiquiris. Probably involves daiquiris. Yeah.
Well, Nyssa can't drink.
That seems like an awfully festive drink.
Yeah. It's a lot of work, too, when you're
fake
sad.
Fake it till you make it.
No, the doctor's got that, what, scotch or whatever in the wall? This is when you break that up.
The brandy, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
I will say,
what happens when you're in the TARDIS and you pour one out? Is the floor just—it's
just sticky until the TARDIS regenerates.
Yeah. They just had linoleum for a couple of seasons. It's really slippery.
There was a 12th Doctor story where somebody threw up, and I'm trying to remember how that played out.
Do you seriously think the Doctor bothers to add a broom closet to the TARDIS? He doesn't have a mop. That's way too boring.
But you're assuming that the doctor is making the choices. This is not true.
Do you think the doctor knows where that broom closet is and would ever go get a mop?
No.
We've seen how the doctor wields a mop.
Tegan, right? He clearly has not had enough practice.
Holding it like a carrot. What is this thing?
I feel that Tegan would have gone looking and found said broom closet to know where it was.
She would have. God, gotta do everything myself.
Yeah, she's the most
She is probably, that's part of her job description, is cleaning up after sloppy passengers.
Yeah, cleaning up sick. There you go. But to each of your points about the fact that this is a rewatchable, or I should say specifically recommendable to people to be able to see the Fifth Doctor at a point of alarm, concern, you know, a genuine emotional connection with at least one of his companions at the time. I think if you were to take this one and sort of build a set, you've got this one, you've got maybe Kinda for Tegan's strong story to date, and maybe something like Keeper of Traken for Nyssa, so that we can see her kind of go through that whole emotional arc of the loss of her father and that sort of thing. I think that between it all, you've got a really strong set of stories.
Yeah. And the Black Plague one.
Oh, well, yeah.
I mean, you have to have that one for obvious reasons, just saying.
Well, yeah. But this is, I think this is Turner sort of establishing himself as the showrunner, saying, you know, this is what I'm doing with this thing. I'm going to take some chances. You don't know me. I'm going to kill off a character. I'm going to bring back classic villains and up the ante on how genuinely dangerous they are and proceed.
They got plan C's and plan D's we didn't even have to wait to find out about.
Nope, they just plans upon plans. They got Rolodex of plans.
Next week we're going to be coming back with our with an interesting kind of, not necessarily a game, but more of a thought experiment.
I'm not really sure what triggered this in my mind, but I kind of, as I was thinking it through, and I bounced the idea off Julie, I think we both agree that this might be kind of fun to tinker with. So we, after, whether it be as a result of our rewatches or just stories that we've really enjoyed in modern seasons, there are some stories that just don't quite land. We don't hate them. We don't think that they were, you know, a huge problem or anything. They were just, they weren't exactly gems, either forgettable or clunky or something about them just didn't have the right chemistry. But I thought, could you identify one that to you was kind of lukewarm and, you know, wasn't something that you'd really want to watch again unless you were just, whatever, as Jay would say, one of your doing laundry kind of episodes. But you could step it up simply by swapping out your Doctor and Companion set. So if you had a Ninth and Rose story that you didn't like, number one, how could you? I'll take a different example. If you had a...
Don't ruin things. Just, we get it.
Same story, same villains, same conflict, same supporting characters, but switch out the Doctor and whichever companion you normally associate with that Doctor.
Yeah.
So it's not just a Doctor swap. It's Doctor and Companion swap. And then let us know what you think that does to it. Where does it fill in the gaps, or how does it amplify the story into something you would consider far more entertaining? I think it'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, this is exciting. I'm excited for this one because I always like the thought experiments because you can't really go wrong. I mean, Haley gets it wrong frequently, but
she's gonna be out next week, so
I'm gonna be here. Because there's no fun drinking games involved.
Psych, we're doing Haley's drinking game.
Oh, yeah. And switcheroo. Next week, maybe by next week, we'll have that extra segment we've been promising to you for 6 months.
Where Haley, I've got a trip now.
Oh.
Ouch, email, I broke my foot. I can't be on a podcast.
My ankle, doctor. I have to lie here in the cavern.
I was on that grandma dancing show.
Grandma got me.
Well, this has been episode 434 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, man, we're going to finish this one off with a bang. What, too soon?
No. 65 million years too late. And this is Kier saying, Goldschlager for everybody.
And this is Julie saying, oh, help yourself. I'm not waiting around while you plot the course to your own destruction.
And this is Haley saying, go, sons.
We'll see you next week.
Allons-y.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Want to keep the conversation going? You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, or just send us a good old-fashioned email to feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can also give us a phone call at 754-225-5477. That's 754-CALL-GPR, and you may hear your voice on a future episode of the show. Everything's got to end sometime, otherwise nothing would ever get started. Join us next week for a brand new episode.
Jacob Hansen. Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2021. We'll see you next week.